Office Wife. The story of the girl who married her boss and of the girl who took over. Here is Jeff Pilgrim to commence another chapter of Office Wife.
I suppose, in a way, I've burned my boats. I still can't decide if I've done the right thing. I asked Stella to marry me when I'm free to do so. Seems to be that. Anyway, why not? If it hadn't been for Stella, I'd be doing at least 3 years' hard labor this minute. As for Marcia, well, she came to me the night her uncle died. It looked like a momentary weakness on her part. She's sticking to her attitude where Henry Palmer's concerned, and that lets me out. It's Mr. Palmer now. Associate Director of Tressa de Bendigo and Company, if you please, with, as they say, further prospects. you have to laugh. It's all so utterly fantastic. Oh, blast. Yes?
Miss Harriet Bendigo to see you, Mr. Pilgrim.
Ask one of the boys to show her in, will you, Ginny?
Yes, Mr. Pilgrim.
What does Aunt Harriet want to see me for? Hang it all, I hope she doesn't want a chivvy. I've taken all I'm ever going to take from that family, but I might like her too much to be rude. Good morning, Miss Bendigo. Please come in.
How do you do, Jeff?
All right. Thank you, Max. Shut the door, if you like. Do sit down, Miss Bendigo.
Thanks. It was very kind of you to write, Jeff. We appreciate your sympathy.
It was sincere. I was very fond of Mr. Bendigo, despite all that happened. But from your point of view, I suppose that's best forgotten. How can I help you?
Well, actually, my dear boy, I hardly know how to begin. It's about the circumstances of my brother's death. And if you don't want to listen, say so, and there won't be any hard feelings.
No, I'd like to listen.
Jeff, going back months and months to the time of all that trouble, I want you to know that I've never really believed you were, well, a thief. It's raking over cold ashes now, but I used to look at it from every angle, and my reason always said one thing, and my feelings the other.
I think I can understand.
But I could never go against my family. So I tried to be passive and not enter into the matter at all.
Miss Bendigo, you said yourself they were cold ashes. What's this for?
Well, I merely want you to understand how it is that I can come to you at all. Jeff, I've never liked Harry Palmer.
Why?
That's the trouble. I don't know. His manners are above reproach and he seems very fond of Marcia. But I simply don't like him.
Neither do I.
Try to speak calmly about this. A few minutes before Tressida died, he was conscious just a little while. He tried desperately to tell me something about Palmer.
Huh? What did he say?
Nothing coherent. But I know, Jeff, there was something terribly wrong. Don't ask me how I know. I couldn't possibly tell you. But my brother and I were very close. And I could feel he wanted to warn me. He kept saying Palmer and Marcia over and over. And, Jeff, now that Harry Palmer's stepping into Percy Fleming's shoes, really, I'm worried half out of my mind.
I'm bound to say, Miss Bendigo, this is all pretty vague. What can I do in my position?
I expect I'm just a silly old woman. Had to tell someone.
Tell someone what? You haven't told me anything yet, really. What is on the back of your mind?
Tressida was bruised. And there was no need for him to go downstairs. He had his telephone handy by the bed, and it had been knocked off the stand. Dr. McIndoe said over and over again there shouldn't have been any heart failure, provided he kept quiet. But the only account we have of what happened in the house that night is Harry Palmer's.
You know what you're suggesting.
I'm not suggesting anything, Jeff. It's just that...
Just that what? The inference is there.
Something happened to Tressida that night, and Palmer knows what it is. Jeff feeling so certain of it, how can I let Marcia marry the man? How can we rest secure with him handling all our affairs?
Miss Bendigo, will you do something for me?
Yes, of course I will.
Don't say a word about this to anyone for a while. No one at all. I want to think about it. Could I come to see you one evening soon?
I wish you would.
When Marcia's out of the house, perhaps.
Well, if you'd rather.
I'd much rather. Don't worry. The tide's turning against Harry Palmer. I can feel it. One day we're going to catch up with him. So, do you promise not to worry?
I'll try.
Do you know, Miss Bendigo, I'm very glad you came to see me.
Do you know, Jeff, so am I.
Now, see here, Hooper. I'm paying you to get results, and you're not getting
them. Well, Mr. Puller, I'm doing my best. Those two, Palmer and Mrs. Tennant, they're smart.
Then you've got to be smarter.
Yes, but we're not dealing with a couple of petty shoplifters. These two are tough. The more I realize what they've got away with, the more I have to hand it to them.
No matter what you've had to do and how you do it, you leave a trail behind you. What about the tenant woman's £1,700? Have you found out where it came from?
Not yet. I'm working on it. But you can't walk up to the ledger keeper in her bank and say, "Listen, chum, where does Mrs. Tennant get her dough?"
Well, this is no good to me. I want action.
The trouble is, Palmer's sitting pretty. It's not as though he was still playing his game. He's played it and won. All he has to do now is marry the Pilgrim girl and cash in. He hasn't even got Tressida Bendigo to worry about anymore.
Haven't you turned up anything new on either Palmer or Tennant?
Only that Angela Tennant's either broker or meaner than a Parsi moneylender.
How do you make that out?
She's being sued for £110 by one of the big stores. And it beats me why she doesn't pay them off.
Out of her $1,700?
If she still has it. And that's another thing I can't find out. Her credit's shot to ribbons. The little shops round the block of flats she lives in won't give her any more tick. Neither will the garage where she gets her car greased. She's owed them 20 for weeks.
She's broke, all right. Listen, Hooper. Has she ever seen you face to face?
Not that I know of.
And what about Palmer?
Palmer? Once only. And that was a long time ago.
We'll have to come out into the open, that's all. And if she's broke, so much the better. First of all, is there any possible chance of getting a microphone or a wire recorder into hers or Palmer's flat?
This isn't the movies, Mr. Puller.
No, of course not. Oh, all right. Here's what I want you to do. Now, you don't cut a bad figure. In a bar like Corazzi's, you should be easy to buy a new one.
Yes, well, that's all for now, Mrs. Tennant.
How's the heart, Doctor? Anything to worry about?
There's the slightest suggestion of a tremor, but nothing to worry about. You're perfectly sound organically. By the way, do you drink much?
Occasionally.
Brandy?
Generally.
It might be a good idea to cut it down a little.
I'll try. By the way, Dr. McIndoe, you attended poor old Mr. Bendigo who died the other day, didn't you?
Yes, very sad, that.
I was quite cut up. I'm a great friend of Marcia's, you know.
Oh, are you really? Oh, well, well.
Yes, and apart from that, I felt sort of, well, close to the affair. Because I was talking to Harry Palmer on the phone at the very instant Mr. Bendigo was taken ill.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, I remember distinctly my clock striking 9:30. It was at 10. Anyway, Harry said he'd have to hang up at once. Mr. Bendigo was stumbling down the stairs and obviously very, very ill.
Yes, that'd be about right. Palmer called me just a few minutes after 10. Lucky he was there.
That's what I thought at the time. Yes, well, I'd better not keep you gossiping. I'm a frightful chatterbox, aren't I? Goodbye, Dr. McIndoe, and thanks awfully.
Remember what I said about the brandy. Come and see me again in a couple of months. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doctor. So I was right. Palmer waited from 8:30 till 10 before lifting a finger for old Bendigo. Oh, boy, have I got that snipe on toast. Thanks, Charlie. Put it on the slate, will you?
Excuse me. Mind if I take this, too? No one here?
Fire away. It's all yours.
Thanks. I think I can squeeze in. Don't overdo it with the room, do they?
Oh, I say,
I'm very sorry. Tipped your drink all over the bar.
Did you have to?
Any of it on you? Here, let me wipe it off. I'm a clumsy beggar.
I'm inclined to agree.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's buy you another one.
I should jolly well think so. His name's Charlie and mine's Brandy, Lime and Soda.
Right.
Charlie.
Well, I'd better introduce myself, I suppose. My name's Cedric Hooper.
Mine's Angela Tennant. And do you have to tip drinks all over the place to pick your women up?
But I had no intention of...
Never mind the alibis, chum. And if you're going to buy me that drink, let's get away from the bar and sit down to the table.
There's nothing I'd like more. Lead the way.
Haven't I seen you around somewhere before?
Could be.
Let's have a good look at you. I'm positive I've seen you somewhere. Where do you live?
468 North Shore Drive.
Ah, that accounts for it. Only a few doors away from me.
You're out that way too, are you?
Yes, Mr. Hooper, I'm out that way too, and let's stop playing games. What do you want?
I don't get it.
But I do. You're the character Benny Poole has been playing to snoop around Hattie Palmer and me. What do you want this time?
No two ways about it. This one's a shrewd cookie, and it's not the half of it. All right. I've had my instructions, so here we go. This time, Mrs. Tennant, you get the full treatment, and we'll see if you're as tough as you make out. For mine, I doubt it.
We invite you to listen to further episodes of Office Wife, written by L.J. Hardy, a Donovan Joyce production.